Is your hair always pink?
It is. Yeah.
Is that just how long has that been like there? Just you decided you're like the pink chick. I'm just gonna sit here in my shed and have pink hair. Yes.
And you can't stop me.
You can't stop. I want pink hair, damn it. Yeah. I can understand that.
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Weekly tips for building and marketing your profitable business online. From copyblogger.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Internet Marketing for Smart People. And on that note, we have Hugh McLeod with us today, who is the brains and the heart and the mind behind Gaping Void. He is probably the only person I know. I don't know. There's not even a way to introduce Hugh. Hugh is Hugh. If you don't know his work, you need to go out and find it and look it up. He happens to have a newish book out, which was our excuse for doing the call. But really, the excuse is just that he and I were on a very similar wavelength, and I learned a lot from Hugh when I was getting going, and we just wanted to talk to each other. So we're going to share that with you today. So, Hugh, thank you.
Hello there, Sonia. Nice to be here.
So I want to start, if it's okay with you. We were just doing the pre-record by talking about stupid interview questions. So, you know, I don't feel any pressure to be smart or anything. But I want to talk a little bit about something that I think it gets looked at in a cynical way a lot. But I think the real success comes from when you put that aside, because that's just self-preservation, right? That's just like, you know, that's cheating yourself and saying, that's crossing your fingers behind your back and saying, well, if I don't believe it, then if I fail, I don't have to feel bad.
Pascal's wager.
Right. And the header on this, the headline, you know, copy blogger, we got to get the good headline, is the market for something to believe in is infinite. And I'm going to do a real quick quote from kind of the latest incarnation, as it appears in the book Evil Plans, which you guys have to get, because, well, we'll talk about that. We are here to find meaning. We are here to help other people do the same. Everything else is secondary. We humans want to believe in our own species, and we want people, companies, and products in our lives that make it easier for us to believe in one another. That is human nature. Product benefit doesn't excite us. Belief in humanity and human potential excites us.
There you go.
There you go. So, I mean, it's kind of like maybe we should just stop.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's a kind of dichotomy. You have to hold these kind of two almost contradictory thoughts in your head at the same time that, A, we are divine beings, and two, or at least incredible beings, or life is this amazing, miraculous, weird, crazy, cosmic thing. And then also the minutiae of picking up your laundry and getting your bills paid.
and making your lunch work, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that conflict between what we are and what we could be and what we really are and what we're not. And, you know, this, and that's what that part, that rant you just read out was called the Hugh Train Manifesto. We're basically, when you think about marketing or you think about success, I mean, what do people really want? Right. And I think what people really want besides, you know, love and all that stuff, love and health and all that stuff is meaning. They don't want their life to be shit.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it has to be non-shit, it has to be great all the time, but you just want to feel like, okay, now that I'm here, I want it to somehow be worth it. And I don't want it just to be a collection of molecules that lives and dies for no reason.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes, you know, if you followed some of the paint-by-numbers stuff,
yeah,
if you followed some of that paint-by-numbers business in a box, you know, ATM, internet ATM cash machine kind of idea, it might work. But it would be so incredibly unsatisfying. I mean,
it wouldn't just be unsatisfying. Your life would dry up. Your life would turn to gray powder. You know, I mean, it's not like it's going to make you happy.
Yeah, essentially, you would be working at another meaningless desperate day job, you'd just be somewhat better paid and you'd have a higher stress level.
Yeah, or maybe you would be better paid.
Yeah, or you'd be worse.
I make a lot more money now than I ever did when I had a real job. Yeah. You know, this thing where if you have a quote unquote real job, you're gonna make more money. No, you're not.
Oh yeah, my gig on my own immediately, as stressful as it was, started making a lot more money than my quote unquote safe corporate day job.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, I'm not against people having corporate day jobs, because some people are very well suited to it, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Some people have a life where, you know, it's, they want to take their kids to hockey practice and they want to like watch TV on the weekends, you know, which that's nothing wrong with that either. But it's kind of like you have to kind of, and I think once you've been around a few decades, it gets easier. I think you have to, you know, figure out what works for you. And I think that's kind of like, obviously, you and I are both have spent time in the past giving advice to other people. And people ask us questions about that. And it's like, and we give advice, but it's like, well, it only works so far. if this advice isn't suited to you, then it's not going to work, no matter how clever I am or how good the advice is. You know, it's kind of like there's no kind of one size fits all. So, I mean,
yeah, it's interesting because we talked about that a couple of times on the blog this week, that no one can really tell you, okay, here are the Ten Commandments and you follow them. And, you know, if you follow my rules, you will, success will come out of the other end. I mean, at some level, it has to come from you. I do believe in maps. I do believe you can get roadmaps toward paths that are less painful or more interesting or more productive.
Yeah.
People can, it's the old Zen thing. The finger pointing at the moon is not the moon.
Yeah, right. And you can, and I mean, most of my advice is not really about what to do. It's more like, well, don't step on that landmine.
Right.
Because I have. And,
yeah, it hurts.
It hurts, yeah. You need those feet. You don't want to blow off your ankle. It's not fun.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's fine. I mean, it's kind of funny because it's like, you know, you and I are both, I think, what I call reluctant gurus. You know, right. It's like, you look at Ignore Everybody, my first book, where, you know, I start off with a caveat. This is stuff that has worked for me over the years, for better or worse.
Right.
And people say, well, I don't agree with that. So, well, okay, well, you're not me, so I don't care.
Right.
So, absolutely. You know, it's like, absolutely. I said, this is stuff that has worked for me, and you know, hopefully you find it valuable. I think it's kind of like, there's one thing about having wisdom to impart, and then the danger is if you say, well, here's a system, just buy into the system, and then right. Everything will, you know. And as we all know, systems are, they're systemic anyways. they're just kind of, you know, results may vary, let's put it that way.
There you go. Yeah. I want to talk about, we've been talking about authority on the blog, on CopyBlogger, and we're so interested in this idea of authority. Brian had this really cool special report called Authority Rules, and we reworked it, and we added a bunch of stuff to it, and we're doing some webinars because this is really, we think, kind of where it's at right now for somebody who's trying to make something work. It might be a business, it might be a nonprofit, it might be a political project, but they have something they care about that they're deriving meaning from. And at some point, and you know, I'm a huge Seth Godin fangirl.
Sure.
I was very influenced by tribes. We had our own expression of that tribe idea in the third tribe. And a tribe implies a leader. And Godin's idea was leadership comes from you standing up and saying, hey, I have an idea, who wants to come along?
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, where do you see authority now? Because authority has definitely changed. I mean, we don't do the thing where, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. That just doesn't. No one is convinced by this anymore. That is not compelling.
I think authority. I had this line. It just said, "With porn, all things are possible." I meant pornography. I don't mean like the naked pictures pornography. I mean like real estate porn or, food porn or gadget porn or
marketing porn.
Marketing porn, which you and I are both in the business of purveying.
Exactly. And proud purveyors of marketing porn we are.
Yes, we are. I do kind of like artist lifestyle marketing business porn. the thing is authority means, the trouble with authority is it becomes such a buzzword. I kind of retch when I have to say it.
Yeah.
But authority, to me, authority is, in terms of the web 2.0, certainly on the blogosphere, it's like, well, how much pornography are you offering people and how many people are reading it? Because, certainly a lot of people would love to have your job or love to have Seth Godin's job or love to have my job.
Yeah.
And that fact that that's true would give us all a lot of authority, I suppose. I remember when I was, I first came across Guy Kawasaki about 15 years ago, who I know personally now. That's kind of interesting. And I just, and I was kind of unemployed or my career was kind of floundering and I was kind of grumpy. And then there's this guy, Kawasaki, who's this like this upbeat, energetic West Coast dude who gets to do cool stuff and then write cool books about doing cool stuff. And I kind of went, how come he gets to do it and I don't? I'm such a loser.
Yeah.
And so I guess Guy Kawasaki's stuff was pornography. And, Seth Godin had the same effect on me too. I loved his books. I mean, I still do. Tribes are probably my favorite book of his, way more than Lynchpin. I don't know why. Tribes really kind of, because I can do the Lynchpin stuff in my sleep, but leading a tribe's much harder.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what it is. But I think authority means being able to walk the walk and also being able and willing and able to pay the price for that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I had a friend who was in the, when every kid of a certain age wants to be a rock star, okay? Well, I had a friend who was played bass in a very successful band, a Canadian band called the Crash Test Dummies. Remember them?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was in that band. His brother was the lead singer. So it's kind of like a family affair. And I got to know him back when the band was like chart topping. And we became really good friends. He's a neighbor of mine, and we just got on like fabulously. I got on well with his wife. He was just a great guy. And just listening to the mundanity of his life, the bus tours, the minutiae of being a rock star is actually, wow, that's really boring.
Right.
Wow. I mean, you get to go on stage. Okay, that's kind of cool. But what if you don't feel like it?
Yeah. What happens if you get the flu?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's you never think of these, when you're a kid, you never think of like being a rock star's work, but actually there's a ton of work in being a rock star, keeping a show on the road. I think our view of authority has been skewed by this idea of celebrity, which we are inundated with. You're schlepping away at 7-Eleven, there's some kid the same age as you who's a movie star. Life is unfair. And it seems kind of random, doesn't it? And then somebody like yourself and myself, we found, quote unquote success at a fairly, not late in the game, but I was certainly a late bloomer.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly wasn't. I didn't come out of the womb a golden child, let's put it that way. I wasn't a rock star when I was 24, let's put it that way. Yeah, I just think authority is being able to do something interesting and being able to pay for it. And being able to, defend your position.
Well, it's interesting because, the idea of authority or being, some marketing teachers call it being a celebrity in your niche, is not new. It's not new at all. I mean, Crazy Eddie does it with the used car lot. There's a lot of businesses built around a charismatic story. And there's nothing new about that. Sometimes the part that's a little bit missing when people do marketing education is there's a responsibility that comes with that. And they talk a lot about, how great it is to have all these people paying attention to you and how great it is to have so many people who trust you that they'll buy your products. What they don't talk about is the other side of that is you got to step up. And if you're not delivering even when you don't feel like it, if you're not putting something, if you start to believe your own press, if you start to get, like everybody you know, normal people have days when they're lazy and in a shitty mood and and they're not putting it together. You owe something to people as an authority. And that's the side of it that's maybe not so shiny, but it's important. And I think that people of integrity actually crave that. I think people of integrity crave the other side, because that's actually where a lot of the meaning comes from.
Sure. Well, you know, I was thinking, I was talking to some kid the other day about being an artist. I'm like, I actually don't like the word artist. I like cartoonist better for myself. But anyways, I said, we're talking about Apple because we're both Apple fanboys. And I went, well, the thing to remember, kid, is Apple's made the easy stuff easier, but the hard stuff, I'm afraid, is just as hard as ever was.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, yes, thanks to the internet, you can send an email to Bill Gates, but you still have to have something interesting to say to him, or else he's not going to care. The hard part is having something interesting to say to Bill Gates, not the fact that you press the send button. I remember Robert Hughes talking about, you know, what successful artists and successful artists who are good anyways have.
Right.
Is a talent, stamina, and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's changed. I don't think any internet Web 2.0 magic formula has changed that one little bit. I mean, I
remember hearing when I was writing novels, somebody told me once, you need luck, talent, and persistence, but you only need two, which I thought was interesting.
No, I didn't screw with that.
Really?
Luck, stamina, luck, perseverance.
Luck, talent, and persistence.
You need talent. You need persistence because, well, you get lucky early, but then if you get lucky early, then you're going to have that fabulous rock star lifestyle to maintain. Therefore, you're going to have to keep earning. Therefore, you have to be persistent. I don't know. It's kind of the one thing I have famous friends.
You know? Yes, right.
I mean, really famous, not just internet famous, but actually.
Not just like you and I are famous, but real famous.
Yeah. And the one thing they all have is work ethic.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there is success for the one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who have not, let's say, found their celebrity or their authority would feel like they would be happy with that. They think, well, if I could just get one hit, make $1 million, you know, whether it's a hit record or a breakthrough novel or a really great cartoon or a really great blog post, it's going to make me $1 million. And it's when you haven't done that yet, it's very normal and natural to think, I would be happy if I did that. When you talk to people who have done that, the satisfaction comes from the long haul.
Well, you know what it's like? It's like being linked to by Boing Boing. All of a sudden your traffic on your blog goes through the roof and you think you've made it.
Right.
And then 12 hours later, your Boing Boing's blog post about you goes off the front page, and then so does your traffic. And then where did it go?
Mm-hmm.
And so the moral of the story is don't plan your life around other people's spikes.
Yeah. I had that literally happen to me. I had Godin linked to me really early on. And one of the things I admire about Seth Godin is he is on the lookout. He's on the lookout for new talent, for people who are getting started, for people who have passion but don't have a name yet. And I think that's, I love that he has the energy to do that. I just respect that hugely. So he linked to me, not entirely by accident. I wrote a pretty smart review of one of his books, thinking I might get a link, and I did.
But see, you can't rely on that stuff. But yeah, Karen.
Yeah. No, I mean, you take your shot, it works, it doesn't. And it was fascinating because it is. I mean, I got more traffic than I could have dreamed of having. I kept a little of it. It was cool. It gave me some, it perked me up like crazy, you know. It gave me cheer to keep going. But, you know, did I become successful because Seth Godin linked to me? No.
No.
No. It was... It was a cool event. It did do me some good because I had some things in place to keep some of the traffic. And that's all you can say about it. You know, he doesn't have the magic. He can't give you the magic bean. I can't give you the magic bean. Hugh can't give you the magic bean.
One of my favorite stories, and somebody who's studied the classics more than I have can verify this or not, is that in ancient times, in ancient Greek, at the Olympic Games, they if you want an event at the games, you weren't given like a gold medal and a big contract with Nike.
Right.
You were given a laurel wreath to wear on your head.
Yeah.
For a week.
Yeah.
They throw it away. It was in material terms absolutely worthless. But they gave it to you as metaphorically to symbolize the transient nature of victory.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that victory is a transient thing, so don't get too attached to it. And I think a traffic spike by Seth Godin would. But I mean, I know Seth personally. He's a friend of mine. It's like, you know, he gets, you know, Seth may look like a rock star to a lot of people, but, you know, his life is boring. He gets up in like suburban New York and then he goes to his office and he does his thing. And then he goes home, has dinner with his wife and plays with his kid or whatever, and then goes to bed. It's really boring suburban. It's not like there's no drugs and hookers, I'm afraid.
Sad shortage of hookers and blow in Seth Godin's life.
I tell you. And so I've always had this attitude where, I mean, my business has good days and bad days, but the thing is, I've always drawn cartoons. That's what I've always done, you know, and I've never not drawn cartoons. And some days I've written books and some days I've made money and some days I've written blog posts and some days I've, you know, stressed out about money, and other days I stressed. But the thing is, this is what I call the workbench mentality. About five or six years ago, I was working for an English tailoring firm. You know, we were selling $5,000 suits.
Yeah,
and I was partnered with a guy called Thomas Mahon, who's like one of the best tailors in the world, and. And that was going good for a while. And what I noticed about him was he just had the regularity of his profession.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, whether or not the New York Times was on the phone or whether or not some hotshot movie star wanted a suit, he didn't really care. He just got up every day and went to work to his workbench where, you know, his cutting table, as they're called. And this kind of craftsman. Or you look at it like a Swiss watchmaker. You know, right. he turns up at his table with his magnifying glasses and his tweezers, and gets on with it. And whether or not Seth Godin or Boing Boing linked to him or not that day doesn't really matter. What matters is that he's at his workbench. And so to me, the craftsman mindset is much more interesting to me than the kind of heroic, you know, kind of swashbuckling. You know, right. Jason Calacanis, crazy man, right. Entrepreneur type. Although, you know, Jason's a nice guy and all that. But I mean, I just, you know, this idea of a lot, you know, I guess my point is a lot of rock stars aren't actually rock stars. They just kind of turn up at their workbench every day and just get on with it.
Yeah.
But they love doing it. So there you go. But it is actually quite boring.
Well, and I do tell people, yes, there is one magic thing. There is one magic bean I can give you, and if you plant this bean, I can tell you that you will do it. You will make it. You will get an audience. You will be able to make a living, which is you do not stop. You do not stop. So you keep going. It's like Dean Karnazes. Somebody asked him, how can you run 200 miles? You know, without stopping. And he said, you run a 1 mile and then you run the second mile and then you run the third mile and you don't stop until you get to 200.
Yeah.
And that sounds so trite, but it's, if you can do that and at the same time, keep your eyes open. And so if you're really like, you may be headed somewhere, nobody wants to follow you. So you have to be willing to take some feedback. I mean, if you want other people to pay for your lifestyle, you have to give those people what they want.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. What you're reminding me of what Philip Glass, the composer, once said, I have no secret. I get up early in the morning. I work all day. There is no other secret.
Right.
And to me, that's glaringly obvious. I mean, I've been a full-time cartoonist for a while now, and it's kind of like it is a dream job, but I wouldn't call it. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't say, "Hey." To me, I look like it. To me, I don't see the point in not doing that way.
Yeah, and I think some people find that depressing. And they say, well, if I'm going to have to do all that, I'll either go look for something that makes a bigger, easier, more shiny promise, or I'll keep the day job. And that's totally cool. I mean, there's no shame in that. There's nothing wrong with that.
I understand why people want to keep the day job, you know, so that, you know, like I made the hockey practice reference earlier, but I mean, what shiny promise are they expecting to work out?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get that one. It's like,
but the flip side, I think, and for me, this was, I mean, and this is a message I heard early on, and it was very inspiring for me, because it was like, okay, if I don't drop out, even if I have maybe days or weeks when, you know, I feel crappy and I'm not getting much done, but if I don't drop out, I will get there. It might not be pretty, and it might not be easy, and it might not look like somebody else's meteoric rise to fame. Although, really, if you knew that person, it probably would look a lot like it.
Yeah.
But I will get there if I don't drop out. For me, that was hugely inspirational. So I think that, you know, different people take from it what you will.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of thinking about like I'm from Texas, so we had this fellow there called Willie Nelson, right? Who's this kind of cowboy outlaw, country western singer, who everybody knows. And when you think of Willie Nelson, you think of the, you know, quote unquote, the legend, you know, this kind of like charismatic fellow who, you know, kind of, he has a kind of, he's like a white man's Geronimo, you know, he's kind of like this,
nice.
You know, gringo version of Geronimo. And you see the black and white photography and the soulful, you know, I mentioned black and white photography and, you know, the grainy, rough, you know, whatever, and the kind of evocative typography and the immaculate designed record cover, and you go, the legend. But what you don't see is Willie Nelson in the 60s and 70s playing at every low rent shit house honky tonk in Texas day in, day out.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't see the 10,000 hours it took him to get there.
Yeah. My favorite story, one of my favorite stories is I met a guy who worked for Willie Nelson last time I was in Texas. And he told me, funny thing about Willie Nelson has a big house in Austin, a compound, I guess on the west side, like near Michael Dell and all that. And he's got a big house and like a walled compound. And guess what? He doesn't actually live in the house when he's home. He stays in his tour bus. He lets his kids live in the house. Because he's got everything he needs. He spent the last five decades,
yeah,
on the road. So everything he needs ended up in the tour bus, or else he ended up not needing it.
Right.
So he gets home, he goes, well, I got everything I need in my tour bus, so why should I clean the pool when all I want to do is write songs?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah, I love that story because, you know, I think you have to focus. You know, you just have to imagine the focus, but you also have to think of the sacrifice, the stuff he gave up to get there, not just what he has.
Right.
You know, and that's, yeah. But I think anyone who's done anything interesting who's been around for more than three decades starts to figure this stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if Willie Nelson was more happy living in his house, he would live in his house. And that's right. What's fascinating to me is that what makes him happy is doing the work. Where he finds meaning is doing the work. And the house is, you know, it's a nice thing for him to have. It's a perk. If he lost the house tomorrow, he'd probably feel bad because, you know, he likes to have someplace for his kids to be. But
he doesn't actually need the house. He just probably bought the house just to keep his wife happy or keep his kids happy or keep somebody happy.
Somebody happy, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of like... It's why I'm always suspicious of men who have no wife or family. They like stuff.
Yeah.
Men don't need stuff. They just need to go fishing. You know, as long as they got like, you know, a fishing rod and a stack of porn, they don't need anything. They had some beer. Yeah, they don't need much. But then, of course, once they have a wife and kids, and then all of a sudden they need stuff. They need all this stuff. Once you know, I mean, he's and so.
This is why the pyramids were built, people.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of crazy.
Women are responsible for civilization. You heard it here first.
Yeah, well, no. Well, I tell people if women didn't exist, men would not become accountants and
become lawyers and all that stuff. They just fish and
and beat each other up.
Beat each other up and, you know, smoke cigarettes and, you know, compare war stories. And, you know, they just sit around their ass all day and whittle around the pickle, whittle around the pickle barrel.
A lot of whittling. Well, I'm going to kind of wrap it up here. You can probably tell this conversation is just very interesting to me, to Brian. We've just been very fascinated by this whole topic of where leadership or authority comes from and how much of it comes from the tribe and how much comes from you and what is the work required. How do you get there? How do you get from here to there? Yeah. So we decided to kind of spin off a whole second series on that. You can find it at authorityrules.com. And we've got webinars, and I'm writing a bunch of articles. And we just have, Brian has this really awesome report about the elements, you know, the elements of authority and that tension that he talks about between the greatness, right? The inspiration, the sort of transcendent part of it, and then just the nuts and bolts of like, okay, you got to get this done and you got to get that done. So if you're interested in this topic, head on over to authorityrules.com, and we've got just a bunch of good free stuff for you.
Right.
Do pick up Hugh's book, Evil Plans, because I really think you need to have your head on straight before you start this journey, or you'll do dumb stuff that makes you unhappy and unsuccessful. And Hugh is not going to tell you, you know, like how to set up your website or should you use WordPress or Joomla, but he is going to talk to you about getting your head on straight and finding the right things in your heart, you know, that are going to let you lead yourself to the right place. So I think it's awesome. Amen. I really dig both of your books, but this one really spoke to me and I think that it'll speak to people. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Nice to riff with you, Sonia.
Very nice to riff with you.
Hello to the copy blogger empire people. hello there. Nice to talk. Thanks for listening.
This is Sonia Simone and Hugh McLeod with
God bless.
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio.
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Weekly tips for building and marketing your profitable business online. From copyblogger.com. We'll be right back.